British Spy Stories, Season 1. Spy or Traitor? Episode 11. Zurich Airport glints jewel-like as Catherine's plane hits the tarmac and the reverse thrusters power up to bring the craft to a walking pace for the approach to the gate. She guides her Jaguar out of the car park and onto her flat in the centre of the city. After toying with the idea of waiting in London for the Marylebone results to arrive, she gave up on that plan as she sat at breakfast with Richard and realised she would lose her temper with him before 2 days were up, and she can't predict what she will do when that happens. She throws her bag down on her bed, goes to the kitchen to make coffee, and slides her balcony doors open to let the autumn air seep in. She collects her laptop from the bedroom and sits, legs up, across two chairs on the balcony. The sun glides out from whiteness and lights her face. She checks her emails and can feel her body respond as she sees there is one from Marylebone. She clicks on the mail, which contains several pages of technical and biological detail about the sampling process. But it is the last paragraph that yields the information that she needs, the genetic ID of the sample. Marylebone only provide analytical services and not DNA matching to individuals. Catherine copies the long identifier from the sample to her desktop, opens up the MI6 network, then on through the security layer to the Oberon mainframe. A genetic match in the system takes longer than the face matching, and she sets it going, then makes lunch. Half an hour later, the screen pings a completed tone, and Catherine leans over from her Waldorf salad to see the results. On the screen, there is a single word: classified. She scrolls for more, and the message says that the owner of the DNA is a member of the security services. Catherine does not have a sufficient level of clearance to see the name of the person in the sample. She screws up her nose. Rich is not MI6. She met him outside work, so the chance of him knowing anyone in the agency is tiny, let alone sleeping with them. She considers if this is misinformation, deliberately planted by London Centre to cover up something. Then her brain sways the other way. Rich sleeping around could be a security risk, or that is how the higher-ups may see it. There is only one place locally to get access to higher Oberon clearance levels and view more sensitive data, and that is to talk to the spooks who are resident in the British consulate in Zurich. She grabs her things and bangs out of the door. 20 minutes later, she is striding into the consulate. She shows her ID and goes to the third floor. Bradley, she says as she stands in the doorway. Bradley Stewart is only a middle-ranking MI6 officer, but the highest you get in a British consulate. His eyes are sad, and his hair is a mass of dark brown. Aye, he says, adjusting his glasses on his nose. Long time no see, Kate. I was passing Bradley and thought, you know, I haven't seen you for ages. How are things? Busy, you know. We've had a few stakeouts and cases, but not like your high-profile ones. She smiles at him, and they chat for 15 minutes. There's something that I never understood, Bradley, she says in the flow of the conversation. What's that? You know the Oberon system and how it's not always that great, she says. Tell me about it. I had to get onto Tech Branch about their data records this morning. I had this job the other week and went into Oberon to get DNA information. It just said classified. Crazy. What was it? Because I might be able to help to get in, he says. And she inches him along. Well, the job's done now, but no, go on. It's stupid that you can't get in when you're sent a job. She pulls out her phone and finds the genetic ID.
Here.
She hands him the phone. He turns to his computer on the desk next to him and types in the identifier.
I needed the genetics to confirm the kill target, she says, then realizes it's her guilt talking. It's quicker here too than over the open internet, he says.
The result comes back within half a minute, but the same as before, only classified displayed.
See? She says. I can get around that. It'll take a couple of days, though. Great. That's really kind of you, Brad.
Stuart sits in a wheelchair by a large open window in the day room of the St. Hedwig Hospital in central Berlin. A green and red blanket rests on his knees, and an open book sits on his lap. His hands lay either side of the book, and he looks into the middle distance at the parkland outside.
Hello,
says Geraldine from behind him. He turns his head, and his eyes track her round as she arrives and sits down opposite him on a chair.
Hello,
he says.
Good book.
This?
What is it?
Far From the Madding Crowd.
I love that, she says. The woman fighting for happiness.
He smiles at her. Is that you? He asks. She looks away, not being able to cope with the truth of the moment. She changes the subject.
I spoke to the chief.
Murphy?
Yes, he asked to see me. Well, at first I went to see him.
What about? Says Stuart.
You.
What about me?
Remember I said I thought they weren't doing enough after you'd been attacked, she says.
What did they say?
He asked to see me again. And they have a plan for us.
For us? Says Stuart.
Yes. They want us to help out.
She waits for his reaction before fully committing to a smile. Then it drifts away.
What do you mean?
They want us to be a document drop point and pose as a couple and live in a flat.
Why?
Let me tell you the whole plan, she says,
and relates the mistaken identity story that Murphy had briefed her on, and how the Berlin criminal fraternity think he is a field agent who witnessed the murder.
That same gang is planning various activities over the next few weeks, says Geraldine. But the spooks had someone on the inside, and they found a weak link, a young man whose brother was killed, and now wants out. He is willing to provide information to us about the gang's activities, but they need a way for him to drop his information without the gang knowing. So the drop can't be some hole in the wall or station locker, like they normally use. Murphy suggested that we take in the information from him.
No words come from Stuart's mouth, although plenty flood his head. This is a side of Geraldine that he had never imagined. Quiet little Geraldine.
What do you think?
She says, searching his face for anything.
Is it dangerous?
No, it's just waiting for this chap to turn up.
What did you say to Murphy?
I said I'd talk to you. It's a way to help, and it's exciting, isn't it?
Her eyes widen, but his don't. For an hour, they talk about the plan. Minute by minute, inch by inch, sentence by sentence, Geraldine moves his view from a definite no to a maybe. She talks about the good they will be doing, that it won't be for long, and how she feels safe with him near her. A nurse approaches and tells them that visiting time is over. Geraldine gets up and stands over him.
I'll come back tomorrow and see how you are,
she almost whispers. They say their goodbyes, and he sees a smile in her eyes. She turns and walks away, and Stuart watches her go until she disappears through the swing doors at the far end of the corridor. The windows are open, and the sea breeze plays between the outside and the inside. Gabrielle sits in her hotel room wearing a summer dress due to the warmth of the day. On the tablet computer in front of her is everything she has found out in the last 2 hours about Marjorie Allardyce. While Gabby does not believe the data is right about Marjorie being Node 16, she can't afford to take any chances and has been trained to always be suspicious. The personal profile on the screen is largely as she thought it would be, apart from one key fact. Marjorie's father is alive and well and living overseas. Gabby finds this hard to fathom. She and Marjorie once had a long conversation in a pub in Soho in London about how Marjorie would have to move from MI6 to MI5 due to her mother needing support as her husband had been killed in an accident. Yet in the deep dark reaches of the MI6 database, Gabby found a file marked top secret that did not have its encryption settings turned on as it should have done. The file was about Project Dolos and arrangements that were put in place 10 years ago. While the objectives of Dolos were not on file, the fact that they needed to fictionalize the death of Marjorie's father was included, but without explanation. One thing is clear. Gabby needs to urgently talk to Marjorie. She would prefer face-to-face, but that is out of the question until Gabby has neutralized Ulrich. As that thought crosses her mind, she realizes it is the first time that her objective has crystallized in her head. She must neutralize Sebastian Ulrich, or the killers will keep coming for her. Neutralize doesn't necessarily mean kill. It may mean destabilize his business empire so that he abandons the contract on her life. Her laptop pings a notification. She stabs in the decrypt code and it shows a message that Site Carlo has a new upload. Gabby goes to the machine's barrier application, then accesses Site Carlo remotely. One message sits in the inbox from Hans, and she opens it. She reads from the screen. Gab, Riverside is asking to meet you at 12 noon on Thursday. Wants to talk to you about Stranra. There's a location using the MI6 unique global grid system attached. Gabby translates the location so it can be read by civilian mapping software, and it shows the Alpina Hotel in Gstaad. She knows that Hans will not be sending her into a trap if he thinks there is a danger, but she doesn't know if he has been compromised. She checks the letter code that she and Hans set up for their messages. Based on where certain character combinations sit in the message, she counts along, records the letters, then uses a grid decoder to verify. She applies the rules, and the count is 17, one of the secure numbers that tells her Hans is not setting a trap, as far as he is aware. She knows she cannot resist the invitation, and decides to travel up the next day to scout the area before the meeting. Her push to solve the mole problem may be sending her into what could be all above board, or another test of her nerves and fight. But that's the job.